Welcome to Garbage Day. Yes, Thursday is garbage day at the Lawson household, and that's when I get that big, massive green garbage can that the city provides at a cost and have to haul it out my 2,000-foot-long driveway. Now, what I do now is I put it in my Corvair ramp side. That is quite the sight. My neighbors always chuckle when they see me driving the ramp side down the driveway with the garbage can in the back of it. But it works great because I can actually get it in the back of that thing without having the assistance of my wife. And she does not like to help me hoist the garbage can up into the back of the side-by-side because she says it's too heavy and she doesn't need to be lifting things like that. And I don't disagree. It's too heavy for me as well. So the ramp side has come to the rescue. I guess all of you need a ramp side if you have to have or pull the garbage to the road, haul it to the road, as I do. But maybe your driveway is only 15 yards long, so it's not an issue for you. Well, plastered on the cover of this month's Motor Trend magazine is the all-new Silverado electric truck. Do you remember the Chevy Avalanche? You do? Okay. Well, that the Chevy Avalanche is kind of what it looks like. It actually has, it looks like a truck, and it has a bed, four doors, but the back of the cab actually folds down into the, where the rear seat is, and so you can haul some extra stuff, just like the Chevy Avalanche did. This actually uses GM's new Ultium battery platform, which is supposed to give it a pretty good range. Pricing, a pretty broad price range, $41,500 is a base price. I guarantee that goes up. Up to $106,500. So I don't know what the difference between those would be, but there should be something significant to have that big of a price jump. It's got two motors. It weighs up to 8,000 pounds. Folks, that's pretty heavy. Wheelbase is 145.7 inches and supposed to have a range of 400 miles. Now, that's better range than what the Ford Lightning is going to have. The Ford Lightning, again, is the F-150 that looks pretty much like an F-150 today. That Ford really got conservative with it. They changed the headlights and, you know, the grill and it, instead of having a motor up front, it has what they call a frunk, which is a front trunk. So when you open up the grill, basically there's a latch. You pull it up, and there's this big storage space there. So that's going to be nice for packing luggage and going on trips. Ford's range is going to be about 320 miles. Hopefully they'll be able to develop some better battery technology in the not-too-distant future and enable us to go 400 or 500 miles. I think that's going to be the magic number to make people feel comfortable. But it all depends on cost, doesn't it? GM's about to unleash a whole bunch of different electric vehicles. Cadillac is coming out with something called the Lyriq. It's going to be their first EV, available at a base price of about $60,000. Built in Spring Hill, Tennessee. It's going to have 340 horsepower. And it'll be fairly sporty looking, kind of like a crossover. That seems like it. That's what everybody's building. Then they're going to come with a new flagship called the Celestiq. When I say teak, it's spelled C-E-L-E-S-T-I-Q. So that's cute. Escalade, their big mamma jamma, is going to be electric here in the not-too-distant future. And then they're going to come out with some other all-electric powered SUVs, small, called the Optiq and the Symbolic. Really? Can you believe those names? I wouldn't want to drive a car with a name like that. I did get to see the Hummer pickup truck that is going to be actually sold under the GMC brand. So don't go to your Chevrolet dealer to buy a Hummer pickup truck. You'll have to get it from a GMC dealer. But it's going to be pretty expensive too. Its starting price is going to be around $80,000. It's supposed to come out in 2024. However, the launch edition is only available one way, and that's loaded, and it's $112,595. And it's very tall and wide, very Well, I can't say it's beautiful. The dash is, the interior was. I was very impressed with that. I said, now, this is built by GM. So I was kind of surprised about that. They're also coming out with an electric Sierra, which will be very much like the electric Silverado. Buick is actually resurrecting an old name, the Electra. Yeah. It's going to be a midsize crossover, and it's going to be lower, more athletic, geared to singles and couples. And it's going to have a 30-inch curved interior display, but it's going to be called Electra. My grandfather used to drive an Electra 225 Buick. And then they're going to have an Equinox EV. It's supposed to be a $30,000 vehicle, so that's something that's going to be affordable for most folks, the 2024 model year, and it looks good. It's going to be something that will probably be one of the lowest price all-electric SUV. So anyway, GM has committed to spending $35 billion to introduce 30 different EVs by 2025. And that's right about when the Biden administration has said that the corporate average fuel economy for any manufacturer has to be 49 miles to the gallon. Now, in order to be able to offset the terrible gas mileage of a full-size gas hog truck, like a Silverado, they've got to have something like the Chevy Bolt to offset that gets, 100 miles per gallon. Well, it really doesn't use gas at all, but it's the equivalent. And so that's how this is going to be achieved, but there's going to have to be a lot more EVs on the market. You going to buy one? Are you going to switch over? When do you think you will? What are you going to wait on? So let's say you're in the market in 2022. So you're in the market in 2024 when the new models come out, and there's all these EVs out there now that are available. And they range anywhere from, let's say, 300 miles to 400 miles of range. Are you going to take the plunge and buy an electric vehicle? Let's say it's even in your budget, and you are trying to decide between a gasoline engine version of, let's say, a Ford Explorer and an all-electric version. How much of it is going to come down to how it drives? Because I can tell you right now, you're going to like the way the electric vehicle drives. The power is ridiculous. The acceleration is just silky smooth and quick. So you're going to like that. You're going to like the fact that, you don't have to buy any gas. Now, the electric vehicle is going to be more expensive, but you're going to get a $7,500 tax credit from the federal government if you pay taxes. If you don't pay taxes, if you don't have any taxable income, which I don't know how you could afford to buy an electric vehicle then, but let's just say that you've got enough deductions and you really end up don't have to pay a lot of taxes, then you won't get the tax credit. But most people are going to have to. So $7,500 tax credit could even it up. So let's say they're down to the same price. What are you going to be thinking about? Well, I think you need to be thinking about how you're going to use the vehicle, obviously. If most of your vehicle use is local, then and the price is about the same, I'd buy the electric vehicle. If you like to go to Asheville on the weekend or, run down to Knoxville or Pigeon Forge and you're going to be driving around, then, I'd still consider the electric vehicle. Now, if you do a lot of traveling in your business, then I'm going to go with gas or I'm going to go with hybrid. One of those two choices. I don't feel comfortable with the availability, of charging stations right now, but that's going to get better. And it's just a question of when. So anyway, I'm going to take my first break and I'll be back in just a second. Decisions. Life is just full of decisions, isn't it? Well, hopefully we'll have more clarity as to the availability of charging stations in a couple years and what's really going to happen, what's out there. It doesn't make a lot of sense for companies to build a lot of infrastructure out there for charging cars if there aren't many electric vehicles out there. It's like, which comes first, the chicken or the egg? So the only thing that's going to make that happen is government money. and we'll be paying for part of that anyway. I have a question. Have you ever noticed that more often than not, the expectation of something is far better than the reality? You know, that the idea sounds great, but the application just doesn't work. You know, apparently over my career, I've guessed right at least 51% of the time because I'm still here. But man, I have failed big time on several occasions. I can also believe that my goofs were probably my best lessons. Usually my failures were caused by moving too fast. Is that an issue with you? Leaping before I really took a good look. I had a real estate deal that turned out that way one time. And I'm over it now, but it was costly. You know, but occasionally I would have an idea that seemed so right and so perfect that I convinced myself. Matter of fact, I oversold myself without properly considering all of the factors. And one of those factors in a pretty big venture that I took on, created, was human nature. And it was not taking into account human nature that proved to be my undoing. This actual project, and you've heard of it if you've listened to this radio show for any period of time, was called the Consumer Auto Network. I invested tons of money and time into a program that would allow car buyers to go into a car dealership and not have to worry about getting taken advantage of. Now, that sounds like a pretty good premise, doesn't it, for a business? A lot of people have issue with going to car dealers. They always feel, even when they leave and they're happy, that, I probably paid too much. Well, I had all the top dealers in the Tri-City market signed up to offer fixed pricing at or below invoice to members of my network. Now, so this was a network. I was selling memberships in a network. In fact, the dealers had agreed to offer discounts on service up to 20%. That could be substantial. I mean, you just think about what an engine costs to replace. I mean, we've seen some diesel engines cost $11,000, $12,000 just for the engine plus labor. 20% savings off of that is pretty good. I then had to decide what kind of financial benefit would be, or what this financial benefit would be worth to the average consumer. Once I'd built this model of saving thousands of dollars on a car deal and not having to go through a bunch of hassle and then saving all this money on service, what was that worth in terms of an annual fee? Well, I came up with the number of somewhere between $39 and $59, basically the price of an oil change. Now, that sounds like a great deal, doesn't it? Would you sign up for something like that? Well, a lot of people did. And with a population in this overall Tri-Cities market, which includes Southwest Virginia and parts of Western North Carolina and Eastern Kentucky, with it approaching around 750,000 people, I felt a conservative number of people who would be interested in this would be about 1%. 1% doesn't sound like many folks, about 75,000 on the high side, or maybe about 25,000 on the low side. So how did we do? Well, the answer is very poorly. And the next question was why. Well, it failed because I did not put enough thought into the effects of human nature and sound management principles. You cannot manage what you cannot see. And I could not manage the dealers, their managers, and their employees on remote control. They had control over that. These were independent dealers. I mean, I could name off all the different dealerships. There were 13, I believe, dealers that had agreed to go with this program and offer these benefits to their customers. Now, I don't want you to think that nobody got the benefit out of this, because a lot of people did. The people who bought into it, you know, paid the $39 or whatever the fee ended up being. At different times, we would have special promotions. And some people signed up for like as long as 3 years, and the dealers agreed to honor that regardless of how long the network stayed in effect, they agreed to. So I don't think anybody lost any money on this deal. If they did, I'll give the money back. But, you know, it was just a situation where each dealership was an independent business operated by different thinking people. And unless I was in their stores every day, I could not control the result of what happened. That was a bad assumption on my part. And car purchases and service are fairly infrequent activities. It's not like, you know, going to the grocery store every week. And people forget about what they often or what they don't often use. And so we had membership card that people could use. But, you know, it made it to the back of the wallet, or if it made it to the wallet at all, and people forgot they had the benefit. They would go in, get their oil changed, and forget they could get a 20% discount or repair. They go into a car dealership and forget that we're members of the Consumer Auto Network, and the salespeople working there wouldn't ask if they were. Another thing I couldn't control. So badly thought out on that regard, too. And another thing, you know, salespeople, service advisors, they won't respond properly, regardless of how good the concept is, if they don't see a benefit to them. And that's in terms of money. And you know, when people are discounting, when salespeople are discounting cars just right off the front end, they're not happy because it reduces their commission, because a lot of them are commissioned based. Also, there are a lot of discount programs everywhere. I mean, I've got, I don't know how many different cards in my wallet right now that give me discounts on things. And it's hard to compete with all of that noise going on, all of the coupons and rebates and stuff that we get in email. And, you know, if you don't have some way to connect to your members, then it's really hard to keep them or keep the awareness up. We got several large companies involved who were offered the program, and they offered the program as a benefit to their employees. And the employees that we met with absolutely loved it. They thought it was great. But the businesses would not give us their contact information for their employees. They said it was confidential. So we were hamstrung in order to be able to remind them to use the services. Again, people forget. Again, human nature. That's the way it is. You know, the dealers, interestingly, were all in. They saw the benefit, but their employees did not. And discounts take the money out of their pockets. You know, the whole idea was to increase volume. It was to sign up one dealer for every brand. And so, you know, I only had one Chevrolet dealer, and he was going to be able to get a lot more business than the other Chevrolet dealers were, especially from my members. And, you know, you take a group of people that 75,000 strong, that's pretty significant buying power. And that was where we were headed. We just never got there. So a great concept died because of our failure to take into account human nature, employee motivation, awareness issues on the part of members. And you won't find a lot of businessmen get on the radio and publicly talk about something that they failed at. But I think it's an important lesson to be learned, you know, since I'm not retired, but I don't work like I used to. I've got a bunch of young people here to do all that now. But, you know, I still think it's important for people to learn lessons so that they don't repeat them. And if I could help a small business person, I see a lot of businesses fail, a lot of restaurants and little boutique shops and things like that. And sometimes I see a store opening up and I think, are they even thinking about, do they really believe they can make a living doing this? And then 6 months later or a year later, they're out of business. Thank goodness I was a car dealer and I had a backup job. But I thought the Consumer Auto Network was something that would really pay dividends for car buyers and car owners. And it would. But there were too many other, it was just not completely in my control and really in the control of the members either. Because if the dealership that is a participating member doesn't coach their people and train their people and really execute on a daily, weekly basis, then it's going to fall apart. And it certainly did. So any more questions about this, feel free to call me 423-552-2020. My goal is to help you not make mistakes buying, selling, trading, servicing your cars. Typically, they are expensive mistakes and avoidable. You know, my business venture in the Consumer Auto Network was avoidable, but, you know, I just didn't look at it hard enough, and that's why it didn't work. So anyway, my failure is your gain. I'll be back in just a minute. Okay, I pulled my 34-foot camper, Keystone Premier camper, out of storage today. Matter of fact, And first thing I looked at was the tires, and one of the four tires was low. Plenty of tread. Vehicle is, let's see, I got it in 2018, so it's a little over 4 years old and probably not ready for tires. But, you know, tires are such an important, when you get the vehicle out, the trailer or the truck or anything that's been in storage, you need to check your air pressures and make sure that your tires are safe. You know, find the date code and find out when those tires were made too. A lot of people are going to be pulling boats and campers and trailers, you know, hauling mowers around and stuff like that. And goodness, if you're hauling something, make sure it's battened down, tied down with good straps and stuff. You know, you think about these people that ride around, they'll have a trailer, they got yards to mow, and they're going around and they don't really strap their mower down. And if that car happens to, somebody pulls out in front of them and they T-bone a vehicle with that unstrapped down John Deere lawnmower on the back, it becomes a projectile. And it may hit them or skip over them and hit, you know, land right in the windshield of the car, of another car. So strap down your stuff. Check your tires. We noticed that on my truck that the trailer ball, the screw that holds the trailer ball on, was loose, finger tight. So it had worked its way loose, and I've got a 34-foot-long camper on the back of that. Now, I have chains and stuff like that that attach to the bumper, but my goodness, what a risk that is. So tighten everything up. You know, make sure that you are secure before you go down the road, because the life you're risking may not be your own. It may be somebody else's, and you're liable for that, so don't forget that. Well, thanks for listening to this edition of My Car Guru, and we'll be back for another edition tomorrow.